Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Candy. I'm your host here at Life Support Radio, and we are here to discuss the keys to a joy-filled living. And I want to have you meet my guest today, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist. His name is John C. Jameson, and he focuses on helping clients understand and overcome issues such as anger and hurt, and depression and anxiety, and helps people deal with love and relationships and setting boundaries. And Jameson found it helpful to give his clients techniques that would help them find the keys to living a joy-filled life. And he's the author of Thoughts of Pomery, which is an entertaining book of pictures and thoughts that guides the reader to expand their perceptions of life and relationships with others. And this one I really like, Don't Lose Weight, Give It Away, which explores the emotional aspects of weight loss. And he also has something called The Pocket Oasis, which is a fun and useful pocket-sized book that can be used as a tool to help center anyone during a hectic day. And before we enter into the show officially, and before you even listen to Mr. Jameson, I would like for everyone to just take a deep breath and just cleanse yourself from the day and relax and just say, as is, as is. That's been my mantra for a while, because I remember watching a show where this lady was in critical condition and she was actually unconscious. And she said that as she was going in and out between life and death, she heard a lady sitting beside her bed. And she would come there every night, and she had the lady had a thick Jamaican accent. And the patient actually thought it was a nurse. And every night the lady would just come and sit by her bed. And the first night she just took deep breaths. And the patient started breathing with her the first night. And the second night, as the lady would come in, she ended up adding the words as is to her breathing. And the patient that was going in and out of her life and death experience began to recite as is in her mind. And over a period of days, she actually came out of her situation. So she wanted to thank the lady, and she described the lady's voice and told the people how she thought she looked, because during the end she got a glimpse of the lady, and they had no recollection of the lady ever working there. So I would like to think of that as her angel or her subconscious speaking to her, or God speaking to her and telling her that. And I adopted that, and it really helps me relax and accept things as they are. And I just wanted to just share that before we got started today. And also, I would like to thank each and every one of you for listening in during these broadcasts and offering a lot of your thoughts and ideas. And it really encourages me to continue doing what I'm doing. And without further ado, I would like to see if Robert is on so we can get started. Robert, are you there?
I am here, yes. Hi, Candy.
Nice to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing very good. I loved your intro there about breathing and saying as is. That's a wonderful, wonderful way to go through your day.
It is. I was really inspired by that story. And it helps, because when you realize that you can't really do anything about something and you surrender to it, it's amazing how it just kind of takes a life of its own and turns out the way it's supposed to.
It certainly does. And one thing that we always seem to have is that breath that's right there. So, in fact, that's one of the keys to living a joy-filled life, is being aware of our breathing. And from time to time, when we're under those stressful moments, you know, to just take a deep breath. So that's a great intro there.
Well, Mr. Jameson or Robert,
Robert's good.
Can you just give us a little bit of information about who you are and what your purpose is and what you are, what your earthly assignment is?
That's good. Well, right now I'm a marriage family therapist. I've been doing that for, gosh, about 23 years or so. And, you know, what I guess inspired me to do that is to, you know, when you see people who have challenges in their life, how can we get them back into their loving, and so they can experience the joy that is present? And so I'd say the book that I wrote, The Keys to Joy-Filled Living, was probably the cornerstone of what I have been doing here the last 23 years. So during therapy, as often with people go through different issues, whether it be their anxiety or depression or some kind of hurt feeling, and we talk about things, and I realize that people a lot of times would leave, they feel better, but they forgot what we talked about. So then I would end up starting writing out little handouts on different things. And I'd give them to them so they could kind of remember what we talked about. And when they maybe get in a challenging spot, they could pull out those handouts and get back into where they want to be. And people say, God, I got a file folder of your stuff at home, you know, and you got to write a book about this stuff. So after many years, I finally pulled all those together and put them in some kind of logical order and expanded and cleaned them up a bit. And that's what we have here in the form of the book.
Wow. So can you talk a little bit, too, about I watched your video on your website.
Oh, yes.
And I kind of wanted to let everybody know where they can find you. And Robert's email, I mean, his website address is www.thekeystojoyfilledliving.com. And you have great information on there, by the way. You have a really nice site.
Oh, and, thank you.
I wanted you to talk a little bit about, because you talked a lot about negative self-talk.
Yes.
And that seemed to resonate through a lot of the things that you tend to do. Wondering if you could kind of give, you know, everybody kind of has their definition of what negative self-talk and how to do get over it. Mm-hmm. And I think that it kind of depends on the person as to how they deal with that. How do you start people on their journey to overcome negative self-talk?
Well, I'm glad you brought that one up, because it's a huge issue. And if I often tell people, you know, the first step to change is awareness. You can't change anything until we're aware. And so first let's just look at what negative self-talk is. And that's basically how we talk to ourselves. It's what we say to ourselves. It's usually maybe the inner critic or that negative little voice. And it seems obvious that it's there, but I've spoken with people who aren't aware that there's any kind of negative talk, that they're not aware of that negative voice. So first place is being aware of that. And so so self-talk is basically what we say to ourselves. In other words, I could say, gosh, you know, Candy, I love your show and I love what you're doing. Please keep doing it. You're making a wonderful contribution to the planet. So those would be my words. They go to you. You catch them. And now when you catch them, you really choose to use them however you choose to use them. You could say, God, that's great. Thank you. I appreciate that. I want to keep doing what I'm doing. or you catch those same words, you say, you know, that's just a bunch of BS. He's just saying that to make me feel good because I'm on his show, or he's on my show. So it doesn't matter what I say to you or what anybody else says to you. It's what you say to yourself. Shows up in relationships a lot of times, you know. Husband comes home, hey, honey, you look really beautiful tonight. And she says, oh, great, that's wonderful, thank you. Or she could say, you're just saying that because you want something later tonight. Again, it doesn't matter what he says. It's what she says to herself. Goes on into the working relationship. So that's what I'm talking about, negative self-talk. Positive self-talk would be just the opposite, which is what we want, you know, thinking that we feel good about ourselves, we love ourselves, we give ourselves words of appreciation when we do a good job. Unfortunately, part of us, and we've been told that we're not supposed to feel too good about ourselves. So it gets a little confusing. I'm supposed to love myself, but if I love myself, then I'm conceited. So most of the people that are listening to your show and that you and I will ever meet, we don't have to worry about that. We need more positive self-talk. So, but then you asked, well, how do I change my negative self-talk? And so, as I kind of mentioned earlier, the first step is going to be awareness. We need to be aware of our negative self-talk. Now, what most people do, what they say, well, I don't want to be beating up on myself anymore. I want to do something different. And so they start watching their negative self-talk, and what they do is they slap themselves. They stop it. Don't do that. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to be positive. So in a sense, they are really punishing themselves and beating up on themselves. And what happens is it drops from that point of awareness and drops to the unconscious. It's still going on. That person just isn't aware of it. That's what most people do, unfortunately, but it's just not an effective approach. So I come up with a little system. I call it the five steps of change. There's five primary steps, but there's three primary affirmations I have people to work with. So, again, the first step we've already identified, which is awareness. So here I'm aware, maybe I'm driving home here tonight and I start to have a negative self-talk. Oh, gosh, I forgot to say that. I can't believe I forgot that. So there I'm beating up on myself. So then I want to drop to the next one, which I call acknowledgement. And there you have an affirmation that goes like this. Thank you for letting me be aware that I'm beating up on myself. So that sends a little message down to our, I call it my basic self or inner child. And he says, oh, you want to be aware when you're beating up on yourself? And I say, yes, I do. So he says, okay. So, boop, 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 popcorn effect, I'm going to start to see that all over the place, which is wonderful. Because every time I hear myself beating up on myself, my negative self-talk, that's an opportunity for change.
Right.
Okay, so here I am driving. I say, well, thank you for letting me be aware of that. Then we go to the third one called appreciation. And there we have a statement that goes like this. I forgive myself for judging myself. I forgive myself for beating up on myself. Now, again, that there's another, just to kind of expand on that a bit, let's say I have two little mice here, and I have one in my left hand and one in my right hand. In the left hand, and I have a goal. I want them both to cross this goal line. The one on the left, every time it doesn't move towards that goal, I give them a little electrical shock. Eventually, it crosses the line, success. The little mouse in the right hand, every time it even looks at that line, I give them a little pellet. Eventually, crosses the line, success. The difference between the one in the left hand, he's going to be neurotic, motivated out of fear, pain, and punishment. That's how most of us have been motivated. The one on the right is going to be motivated out of loving and nurturing. And so that's what the affirmation is. I forgive myself for. That's the loving and nurturing.
Mm-hmm.
So again, here I'm aware that I'm beating up on myself. I say, well, thank you for letting me be aware of that. I forgive myself for beating up on myself. And then we go to the fourth step called alternative. And here's the last affirmation, which is, next time I'll do better. Two parts to that. Next time, meaning, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, so I'm probably going to do it again. So next time, I'm programming into the future. Next time, I'll do better. I'll do better. Now, we're programmed a strange way where we only hear the last two or three words that we utter. For example, don't think of your shoes. Don't think of your kitchen cabinet, and don't think of the back door. Now we.
I'm thinking about all of those.
Isn't that wonderful? Yes, exactly. So what we do is we tell the child, don't drop that glass, drop that glass. Don't do that, do that. Don't mess up again, mess up again. So ours is, next time, I'll do better, do better. Oh, okay, I'll do better. So you follow me? Now we need to do better. Go ahead.
I'm just thinking because it's amazing how you can think that the universe always has a way of teaching us what we think we know,
yes.
Even if it's something that you may not directly struggle with, your children or someone close to you will cause you to have to learn that, because a lot of the time we think we know something because we don't necessarily struggle with it until we're confronted with it, and then we realize we don't really know it.
Yes, yes.
Does it make sense?
Absolutely.
And children have a way of doing that, and I learned a lot of things that I really didn't have to deal with through the raising of my children. You know, things
yes.
that you look at other people and say, whew, I'm glad I got that out of the way, or I'm glad I got through that, or I'm glad I didn't have to deal with that. And then you deal with it through your children, or you may deal with it through someone you marry, or, you know, you always have to deal with some of these things that you're talking about on one level or another.
Absolutely. None of us are going to get off of this out of here without these lessons, unfortunately. And, you know, I agree with you 100%, Candy. Our children, I think, are little master teachers. And I tell you, if you have any unresolved issues, have a child or hang out with a child for a while, and you'll discover what those might be. They're wonderful. So in the fourth one, again, so next time I'll do better, then we look at, well, if I was to do better, what would that be? So I might do a little brainstorming and say, well, I might put in some positive self-talk. I might visualize myself doing something different. I might write some affirmations. There's a lot of different things that we can do. And then in the last step called action, this is, I'm just going to do one of all the things that I came up with. So it goes really quite quickly. Maybe, again, I'm driving home, and I start to go through this process, and I see myself beating up myself. I say, well, thank you for letting me be aware that I'm beating up myself. I forgive myself for that. Next time I'll do better. What could I do better right now? Well, I'm going to visualize myself saying it. 5 minutes later, I'm doing it again. Well, thank you. I forgive myself. Next time I'll do better. 5 minutes later, there it is again. Thank you. I forgive myself. Next time I'll do better. Now you've got a habitual loop that will set you free.
Right.
Very different approach.
Mm-hmm. That is different.
Yeah.
That is different. Does that have anything to do, or can we segue into how illogical logic works? And I'm just thinking of these things that are jumping out at me that, you know, are on the list to discuss, because it's very interesting the way that you have your perspective, and I'm interested in that.
Well, you know, I love that illogical logic. You know, working with couples, it shows up, you know, almost all the time, because anyone that you and I talk to, you know, they are going to be doing what they're doing the right way. They're not doing it the wrong way. They're doing it the right way, the most effective way. And so couples often will fight about the, quote, right way. And the interesting thing is, if when you really start to listen and track someone down through their process, it's a logical process. It might look illogical to you, but you'll start to see how they arrived at doing that behavior, how that serves them. Then it is the right way, even though it might look the wrong way from their partner's point of view.
Mm-hmm. So basically, now, what if you can't see it that way? You still have to accept it, right?
Yes, acceptance is a big one. If we get there, yes.
Because sometimes we're just not going to see it their way.
Yes.
And I think once you realize that, especially when you're a really cerebral person, like I tend to be,
mm-hmm.
I tend to dismiss things that don't make sense. And I learned how not to do that because grave misunderstandings have taken place if someone expresses themselves to you
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to make it make sense.
Yeah.
And I've learned that instead of looking for it to really make sense, just
mm-hmm.
accept it.
Well, yes, acceptance is going to be one of the primary keys. There's a couple things that we could go down with what you said. Let's look at acceptance just as a methodology first, because I agree. You know, a lot of times we do need to come to an acceptance, and sometimes one of the primary agreements I have couples make is, can we agree that it's okay for us to disagree? Can we make
right.
that as one of the primary agreements? Because there's times that, you know, we are going to disagree because I think orange is the best fruit, and you're going to say no, apples are. So, but how do we come to acceptance? Acceptance is what we want. It's in some ways the process of acceptance is very simple. It's not necessarily easy to do, but the process is simple. So let's say I want to accept something, and trying to come up with a let's say my child is what would be a good thing here? It is insisting on playing the Xbox.
A million of those.
So, do you have one you want me to play with, or do you want me to do the Xbox one?
My child is insisting on doing everything her way.
Yes.
Not, you know, even if it's like the hard way. You know, my mom and I, we were talking. We were like, why does she want to do everything the hard way? Well, in my mind, it's hard.
Uh-huh.
It's the hard way. In her mind, this is really how she learns.
Yes.
And that's the hardest thing for me to understand. She learns through conflict. She learns through butting heads and
mm-hmm.
confrontation. And, you know, that's how she learns. That's how she feels alive. And it goes completely contrary to how I live my life. And I look at her, and I'm thinking, wow, you must really be suffering. And she can look at me with the most joyful look in her eyes, like she's calm. And it just doesn't make sense to me. So I have to fight the instinct to try to keep her from doing things my way all the time.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, well, let's play with that one. That's a wonderful one. You know, we learn two ways. One is through information, and two is through experience. And so, obviously, the easiest way is through information. The more challenging way is through the experience. So your child needs to learn it through her own experience. So how do we accept, let's say, she's a little master teacher there saying, okay, Mom, you need to accept that I'm going to always challenge people, you and people, and I'm going to have some confrontations. Oh, man, how do I accept that? Well, if you have an attitude of gratitude, then it's easy to accept. If you can say, God, I'm so grateful that my daughter challenges the world and confronts the world, then if that's your attitude, it would be easy to accept. And you say, well, Robert, that's nice, but I'm not grateful. I see she gets beat up, people challenge. You know, it's a hard way to walk through if she keeps challenging. And I say, I kind of agree. But then, okay, so how do I change my attitude? Well, I change my attitude by changing my altitude. So here I am, I'm walking up a mountain, I'm about three quarters of the way, and I fall and I sprain my ankle. Oh man, this is hurts. Well, accept it, Robert. I'm not accepting it. It hurts. It's swelling. I'm clumsy. I can't believe it. Be grateful. Grateful? I'm told you, it hurts. It's swelling. I'm not grateful. Change your altitude. So here I am, I'm an eagle. I'm flying right around the mountain, and I see right around the corner of the bend is a pit of rattlesnakes. And if I had kept walking like I was walking, good chance I would have walked right into them. They would have bit me, and I would have died. Oh, God, I'm so grateful I sprained my ankle. It's a gift from God. So it's this changing our altitude or our point of view is, of course, the challenging spot here. But if we can get to a point of view where we can look at the advantage of your child being challenged, being a challenge, challenging the world, then it would be easy for you to accept what she's doing and her methodology.
Right.
And so
it's different when it's your child. To me, being a parent is far more challenging than any other thing. It's a whole new thing. But then, you know, you have different, you know, children. I know my mom said all three of us were different, and I know when I had my son, I thought I was a wonderful parent. And when I had my daughter, I was like, I'm a terrible parent.
She's teaching you that confrontation is good.
Right.
And she's practicing to be an attorney.
Right. Or something. Either attorney or a rock star, you know.
Yeah. And she's actually, in some ways, what she really is doing is she's discovering boundaries. And it's only by pushing the limit do I know that you love me. It's only by pushing the limit that I know how far I can go and I know what my capabilities are.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
I've thought about it that way too.
I bet you have. Yeah. But that's the process of acceptance. By changing my, having an attitude of gratitude, and I do that by changing my altitude. And that truly is the challenging place. How do I look at that from a different point of view? And I don't want to even begin to suggest that's always simple. It's not. And sometimes I work with clients and say, I want you to dream on this one for a while. I want you to get outside the box. I really want you to look at it from many, many points of view. And when you get to the point where you get it, all things line up. And we can talk about, you know, parents being alcoholics or kids being alcoholics, all those things. And when you finally get to that place of accepting that at a gratitude place, there's peace that shows up.
Right. So what about, speaking of acceptance,
mm-hmm.
why do people avoid change?
That's good. Yes. There's two primary things that motivate us as humans. One is pain. The other is pleasure. We always move away from pain and towards pleasure. I say always. That's probably not totally true, but for the most part, we move away from pain towards pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, no matter whatever you or I are doing in our life, we're doing it because we believe that by doing it, we're going to experience more pleasure and less pain. So now what is change? Change means I'm doing something different that I've never done before. It's different. That means it's the unknown. The unknown is that's scary. I don't know what's going to happen. I could make a mistake. Oh, my gosh, someone's going to be disappointed in me. I'm going to be disappointed in myself. I'm going to be seen as a failure. I'm not doing it. It's out of my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so people then want to stay in a more, quote, pleasurable or safe spot. I use the word comfort zone. Let me just expand on that for just a moment. It's one of those another neat little things to kind of get a hold of. You know, in my office I have a thermostat, and so let's say I have it set at 70 degrees. So if it gets too hot, air conditioner comes on, cools it back down. It gets too cold, heat comes on and warms it back up. It stays in that comfort zone. The air conditioning business, they call it the dead zone. Now, we all have our own built-in comfort zone, meaning if I have too much love, joy, health, and happiness, I'll do whatever I need to do to get out of it. Also, if I have too much pain, suffering, or whatever, I'm going to do whatever I need to do to get out of that as well. So we can stay in our comfort zone. And for most of us, our comfort zone has been set early on in our childhood. So part of my job is to get people out of their comfort zone so they can experience more love, joy, health, and happiness. That is not always easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's scary because I'm not familiar. What would I do with my life if I wasn't bitching and complaining all day long?
Right,
right. Right? What would I do? What would I talk about? If
that
I...
brings,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, when you talk about people not being comfortable with too much joy and happiness,
mm-hmm.
you know, most people can't even imagine, you know, well, a lot of people, the people that aren't comfortable with joy and happiness would never admit that they're not comfortable with joy and happiness. But I have seen people who are so uncomfortable with love. They're uncomfortable with seeing it displayed. They're uncomfortable with receiving it. They're uncomfortable with, you know, giving it.
Yes.
And I never really thought about it in the depths of it being the comfort level being set, you know, in childhood. If
mm-hmm.
If you're not taught how to be comfortable with
mm-hmm.
lots of love in childhood, then you're not going to be comfortable with it in relationships as an adult.
Beautifully stated. Yes. Yeah. And that's you really hit it right on it. And it's one of the saddest things I experience. You know, someone who is scared of touch, doesn't know how to touch, or afraid of being loved or sharing their love. It's sad.
It is. And how do you reset that? Do you just have people just do it? Because it's no other way around it other than just to just do it and allow yourself to feel the discomfort, right?
Well, yes and no. It's a tricky thing, you know. Now we're kind of talking about boundaries a little bit. And, you know, I always give the power to the person who wants the least. In other words, if we meet and I want to give you a hug and you want to shake hands, we shake hands. Now, after we know each other, say, okay, I feel safe with you. Now I might give you a hug. But initially, we start with the person who wants the least. So if someone is really uncomfortable with a loving place, then, you know, okay, we keep our distance from them until they feel safe or secure with that. And, you know, they might not ever feel secure with it. And so I really err on the side of giving them their space because I don't know the woundology that sits behind that. If they let me in, I'm going to be very tender and respectful of that as well. Because I know that comes from a deep place of great hurt, great disappointment, great abuse.
Now, you're using a pretty easy example. I'm going to use a more difficult one.
Sure.
And let me know what you think about this, because more often than not, I've seen it done so many times where people that are the least comfortable with love, affection, friendship, closeness, are the main ones to kind of reach out, pull people in, and then initially reject them.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this cycle over and over to test the
mm-hmm.
boundaries and love and the will of the other person.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you explain that just a little bit more for
mm-hmm.
me and our listeners, because that gets a little foggy.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And, you know, it shows up probably the most in adoptees, children who have been adopted. And, you know, there's a core thing of that they're feeling rejected because their birth mother didn't keep them and gave them away, even if they gave them to a very loving family, even if they were raised with much love and nurture. That's a core issue in there, and it shows up usually, you know, it comes into me here usually as adults when they're having problems with relationships, where they'll bring someone in and they have great love, as you're saying, and then all of a sudden, you know, they just just push the buttons just are terrible to their partners. It's like, well, what are you doing? And what they're essentially doing is they're testing them to see, you say you love me. You say you're not going to leave me. I don't believe you. I don't trust you. I'm going to test you and 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 test you until eventually I can't be with you. You're too painful. And say, see, I was right. I knew you. I knew I couldn't trust you. So it gets to that situation, gets them to prove that they are right. Their core belief is right. People leave me. Part of their healing is to, well, yeah, if you test someone on that level, everyone will leave. So we don't want to test them on that level. We need to trust that people will love us and be with us. But that's a different piece of...
we can tie this into sabotaging success,
mm-hmm.
because love is a part of success. Can you just go into sabotaging? Why do people sabotage success? And after that, so I won't forget, I really want you to talk about don't lose weight, give it away.
okay, we'll go into that one.
Talk about success. And we talked about love. Now we're going to talk about success, which ties into weight and all of that stuff. So
That's really a nice tie-in because in some ways it does hook into that. Why do people sabotage their success? And I think, again, it goes back to their core belief. And we see it, you know, probably most obviously when people win the lottery or something, have all this money, and all of a sudden they're back and foreclosure of their home and how they get there. Well, there's a part of them, if you talk to them, they don't really believe that they deserve that level of success, that level of fame, or that level of loving, or that level of respect. And so, because they inside, going back to self-talk, they have some self-talk that says, I'm really not very good. If you really know who I was, you wouldn't love me. If they really saw that, if they really knew me, they'd see how incompetent I was. And so then they somehow out here start to manifest or do those things that suggest that, yeah, you are pretty incompetent. You're not very good. You really aren't very loving. I can see that. And so they start to manifest their self-talk out here in the world so their partner or their boss, whomever, would see that, and then that would confirm again, that they're right inside of themselves, that negative self-talk is right.
Right.
Did you follow all that?
Yeah, self-fulfilling prophecy.
There you go. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so part of our job, again, is to change our negative self-talk to positive self-talk and to be comfortable visualizing ourselves in that loving relationship with someone who really cares for us and cherishes us and who is willing to talk and share and be with us, or to be in that the career path, the job where our boss, you know, does give us that positive feedback where we feel fulfilled at the end of the day and we say, God, you know, I like my job. This is cool. This is good. I like what I do. And that bank account, look at the number there in your checking book. And say, you know, that I like all those zeros there. The more zeros, the better. Yes, that feels comfortable. I love being rich. A lot of people have a hard time with that one. I love being rich.
Right.
You know, so part of it is getting comfortable, expanding our comfort zone so we can be in that new arena. And that, again, goes back to the thing of change, because if I'm expanding, I'm changing. And if I'm changing, I'm doing new things. I'm doing things that are new. And if I'm doing things that are new, I'm making mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, if I'm not making mistakes regularly, I'm not changing. I'm not growing. I'm not expanding.
That's a good way to look at it, too. Again, from a child, from your children's perspective, encouraging them to step out and not being upset when they make mistakes and not expecting them to be perfect. And that teaches you how to accept your mistakes as well. It's very good practice.
Yeah, because kids a lot of times in school, you know, they're so afraid of making mistakes. And then they stop, they get real shy and they get withdrawn. And, you know, we need to make it okay to make mistakes. That's a good sign. You made a mistake. Good job. Strange as that sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. You tried something you hadn't done before. I'm proud of you.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, how can you give weight away? Let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. Again, weight, I've worked with weight in my practice from lots of issues, and it's. I like to say I have the keys to success, and that I would be lying to you. It's a very complicated issue. But part of it, you know, people always say, I want to lose weight. And I kept hearing that. I said, that's something strange about that. And so I'd say, well, if you lost your keys, what would you do? Go find them again. So when we lose weight, there's a part of us that we might not understand, but there's a part of us that put that weight on there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And until I come up with a better way of protecting myself or nurturing myself or entertaining myself, until I come up with a better way, I'm going to go back and find that weight again because it serves me very well.
Right.
So part of the, certainly, so I have people, so don't lose weight. What I have you do is give it away, or you can give it up. You can give up to God or to your higher power. But those two things, I'd have you either give it away or give it up, not lose
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And part of, in order to do that, I need to, again, get an understanding of how it serves me. How does my weight serve me?
Mm-hmm.
How does eating nurture me? And for a lot of people, there is a real thing of self-nurturing there. And there's something about it's always there. It's okay. It's always there.
Mm-hmm.
There's another thing that that's I've just discovered more recently is that, you know, if I eat a lot of food, my stomach and my intestines gets really tight. Now, mm-hmm. that means I'm like in a baby. I've been wrapped up in a blanket really tight. Babies love that. Mm-hmm. That's a very nurturing thing for them. So there's a nurturing thing there with being really full or feeling bloated. Now, if I take my skin and I pull it away, it creates space inside. Mm-hmm. Now, some people don't like that space. But when I stop eating as much food or I change my eating plan or eat foods that don't bloat me, I have space after I eat inside instead of bloat or fullness. Now, so in order for me to give my weight up or give it away, I need to be, my body, my core, needs to be okay with having space around me.
Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting way of looking at that, because I've had to examine my own, I don't eat a lot, never have. I've always been a very, very finicky eater. But
mm-hmm.
I finally kind of figured out why I don't like to exercise. I just started a workout routine. And when I work out, I have a lot of things going on in my head. I travel in my head. I'm a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I write books. I write stories. I do everything in my head. And usually my day is gone. I can't really... It's hard for me to pull myself out of my head and into my body.
Mm-hmm.
I literally can leave my body. And after a period of time of doing that, I'm realizing, wow, especially when I moved from a warm climate to a cool climate and I wasn't going outside and just walking, doing regular daily activities, I put on weight that came from... The heavens, it just came from out of nowhere. And I realized when I worked out for the first, I'll say, couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
I literally could not think. I couldn't sit down to write. It took a very, it didn't take a long time, but it was hard for me to pull that unification together of my mind, my body, mm-hmm. and my spirit. I always felt like I had to be doing one or the other. Because, you know, when you work out and you're into your body, it almost kind of empties out your mind and you have a fresh new mind.
Yes, exactly.
And I didn't really like that. I wasn't comfortable with that. I was like, where are my thoughts? I can't think. I can't think of anything. I have a story in my head. I couldn't think of it. And I had something, an idea that I wanted to write down.
Uh-huh.
And I finally kind of am learning how to live with that. Now, when I work out, my mind holds on to everything now. It's kind of used to it. As a matter of fact, if I'm not working out, I get a little restless and distracted, and I feel like I need to do something.
Well, you hit some wonderful points there, you know, because, again, it was interesting, you know, it was out of your comfort zone to have an empty mind.
Right.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, it is. It is uncomfortable. And yet, when our mind is empty, we are more present and we are more capable of responding to what's going on in our life than when it's full. Almost counterintuitive. So, yes, exercising is, you know, I'm so glad to hear you're doing that. It's so very, very important for a whole bunch of reasons. One is, you know, we get to breathe. I mean, again, you started your program with breathing, and I can't tell you how important it is to breathe. And that when we're working out, you know, you're breathing, you know. And you're getting, and I also like the fact that you're getting in contact with your body, because there are so many emotions that are stuck in the body, you know. So by working out, we start to release some of those stored emotions. In fact, people who start to release weight, anything that they ate over, any emotion, any hurt feeling, any depression, any anxiety that they ate over, when they start to release the weight, that shows up again. It's like it's stored there. It's stored there. Oh, my God. So working out, again, besides giving you the oxygen, helps release those emotions that are stored in the different parts of your body. It's wonderful.
Wow.
Good. I work out too, obviously, but I have to tell you, I don't really like working out, but it's something I do. I do it every day, and I tell my wife it's not a thinking, it's not a feeling, it's just a doing. So I start working out, and I have an affirmation too that I work with, which is I have two of them. One is I love this, and the other is oh boy, more fun. And so no matter what shows up, I try to put those in. So here I am, I'm working out, and I say, oh, I love this. And it's so counterintuitive, I start laughing. And then I start just being silly, and I actually do start enjoying the process. So it does work. So next time.
I'm dying, and I try not to say that, but it's funny. I literally, for like the first 15 minutes before my body realizes, okay, we're getting ready to work out,
yeah. It
is the most grueling period. And then right in the middle of the workout is the only time I really feel good about it. And when I went out of town and I wasn't able to get to the gym, I was at first just glad. I was like, ooh, I get a little break. And about 2 days after, because I do it every other day, I'm working up to every day.
Mm-hmm.
About 2 days after, my body was really crying out, and I was trying to ignore it. And
yes.
I ended up running in place in my hotel and doing jumping jacks and stuff.
Good.
And I was like, wow, is this me?
Now, that was became your new comfort zone.
Yes,
yeah,
I was like, wow, I'm doing this.
That's so cool.
It's good that you gave the listeners the example of not feeling comfortable with space in your body, and then tying it in with me not being comfortable with space in my mind, which kind of had to get used to that. That's a very good way of looking at that.
Yeah, but, you know, we particularly in this day and age, we have so much going on. You know, we have so many stimulus hitting us. You know, the TV's on, the radio's on, the computer's on, the internet's on. You know, and TV. You know, they used to have 2-minute commercials. You know, back in the day, now they're about 15, 30 seconds. Boom, boom, boom. They're just popping. And if you really watch movies or TV shows, they are changing that scene about every 5 to 7 seconds. That's
right.
What is, we've been trained. That's our comfort zone now, trained to how quick we need the stimulus to be happening. That's why kids are having a challenge sitting in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
They're not getting that.
That's true.
Right? They're not getting
and
that quick.
The art, how the arts used to play in that, because I really did use information and stimulation and things to create stories and come up with different theories and ideas, and it would just be great, and I got kind of addicted to that. But when you look at the fact that our kids are not into, they don't run around as much, they don't have as much art involved in their lives, such as drawing and music and things like that, positive music.
Sometimes
can just, you know, build up, you know, in the child, and they end up letting it out in a negative way, and then everybody's trying to figure out, well, what's going on with them?
Yes. Yeah, years ago, before I did this work here, I was a teacher, and I was in Minnesota at the time, and I would take some of the kids from the city, and we'd go out into the country. And it was interesting to see how after the first day, they go running around, and they're hitting trees and banging and bushes, and you know, after about 2 or 3 hours out there, they'd go, they were calm. And so one thing I think it's important that I have, one of the keys to getting back to their joy, is by being in nature. And so I think if we can get our kids into nature and just let them, you know, go run for a while, and it's not always easy to find nature these days, and somewhere in there they will kind of get into their center. It's quite nice. And I think us adults too, by the way.
Right, and a couple of things as well that I wanted to let the listeners know before we run out of time. We don't have that long. This went by really quick, and I enjoyed talking
okay.
with you.
Me too.
If the callers contact you, if they have heard this broadcast and they email you, or contact you at www.thekeystojoyfilledliving.com, then you will give them a 60-minute meditative CD. Is that right?
Yeah, there's a CD that I created a few years ago, a musical CD, that allows people just get back to their center or feel very peaceful. A lot of massage therapists use it for doing massage or in waiting rooms. And sometimes it's like just putting it on in the house as background music. People just like it creates a little oasis for people just to kind of relax. So I would certainly send that if they identify themselves from your show. I would be more than happy to send that to them.
Okay.
Free of charge. Just for the gift of that.
Yeah. Now, what are some other products and services that you are proud of and you just want to share with our listening audience before we get ready to close out?
Well, let's see. The other thing, certainly the book, The Keys to Joy-Filled Living, is one of those neat little things. I keep getting wonderful feedback, so I would encourage that. The other, you had mentioned it earlier, too, which is the Pocket Oasis, which is just a kind of an interesting little book that just fits in your breast pocket. And it's a series of words, and first, by going through it, again, it creates a little moment of being centered, of feeling at peace, and kind of like allows people to just reflect on what's going on in their lives. So it's an interesting story. I'll just tell you very quickly. I was doing some of my own inner work, and out of that I came up with a whole bunch of pages and words and stuff. And so and it was on my desk, and so one day I was cleaning off my desk, and I saw it, and I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. And so then I kind of distilled it down to just a whole bunch of words. I wrote it on a little pad of paper. And so, and then it just sat there for a while. And then one day, I can't remember what was going on, but it was one of those stressful days. And I just kind of like went through it. Just curious what this was. I forgot about it. And you know, just by reading through it, I thought, oh, gosh, I feel better. And so I thought that was interesting. So I put it back on my desk. And a few days later, I said, I wonder if it works again. So I went through it, and I went through the process again. It's like, oh, wow, it worked again. And so that's kind of how the Pocket Oasis has just evolved or became discovered there. And so that's just another little fun thing to play with.
Mm-hmm. That sounds very interesting. So they can we can get that off of your site as well?
Yes, yeah. People can get that there as well.
Okay.
And I guess the other thing is, you know, on my website, I do a blog every once in a while on different things, different thoughts. And so people just, if they want to just go on there and read through some of that stuff and check in every once in a while, there'll be something new up. My next one is going to be on some breathing exercises and different ways of breathing, and which will be kind of fun. So they certainly feel free to kind of go on and check those things out.
And that's wonderful, because I got into breathing started really paying attention to breathing when I came down with asthma at 33. Mm-hmm. I kind of was moving around a lot and doing a lot of things and not really paying attention to what was going on, and kind of developed some allergy and allergies, and immune system down, and just, you don't pay attention to your breathing until you can't breathe.
So, yes, then it becomes very important.
Yeah, yeah. So it's good to do that. I mean, I'm still trying to get that under control. I mean, it's doing better now that I'm exercising. But the ironic thing is that it kicked in during a period when I was actually jogging every day. I was actually working out and doing really well with that, but I was under too much stress. I had just started my bachelor's program as an adult student, taking 15 hours, doing a lot of stuff, and it backfired on me. And then so that was an excuse. Oh, well, I have asthma. I can't work out anymore. You know,
yes.
I did. And things started piling up, and then once I started working out again, it's amazing how it just kind of just started healing that.
Yeah. Certainly doing exercise will help the breathing process, and it's scary to breathe, by the way. It strange as that might sound, there is actually a process of therapy where we get people to breathe, and if you breathe a certain way, it drops you straight into your emotions. And so if I'm not breathing, I don't have to feel too much either, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So breathing, though, how wonderful it is, it's scary to do. There's a lot with breathing. One more quick thing. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, that's there. You're saying you can feel a lot of emotion when you really breathe like you're supposed to.
Yes, because it drops us down into our core, and there's where our feelings are, and what's really going on, drops us out of our head, so gets us back into the body.
Okay, well, Robert, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I will be contacting you again. I would love to have you on the show again, because I still didn't get through everything that I wanted to discuss with you, and I'm pretty sure we had quite a few listeners, even though you probably didn't hear from them. We have people that are on listening, and then people were in and out of the chat room.
Okay.
So you should be hearing from a couple of people, because quite a few people were listening at the time that we did the CD offer. So what we'll do is we'll close here, and as I tell all of my listeners, reconstruct the world by reconstructing your mind. I know you can do it, and I will look forward to having you back on the show again if you don't mind accepting that invitation.
Oh, it would be an honor. I really enjoyed it. You're doing great work. Thank you for who you are and for what you're sharing. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, thank you, Robert, and you have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.